Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Ten Commandment Model right after this. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention, clear back in 1787, followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. And now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have now gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we are the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? It doesn't cost you anything. It's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? Well, last week we were talking about this thing of GMO seeds. We're talking about the plan for the future. And coincidentally, a plan for the future calls for a shift now from the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto model, which we're all practicing here in America, and indeed around the world, back to the 10 Commandment model. So just what is the 10 Commandment model? And when did we Americans practice this 10 Commandment model? And what is it consisting of? You know, today we practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Example, we pay an income tax. That's the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. We have a central bank called the Federal Reserve. That Central Reserve or Federal Reserve Bank, that's the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto. Social Security is the eighth plank. Public school is the tenth plank. Now, these communist principles over there today, you know, we call it communism. In ancient times, they called it the Babylonian mystery religion. And then the Assyrians picked it up, and the Romans and Greeks, and, you know, we Americans, it's natural, you know, we've all picked up on. And we're practicing that. Now, we get a result. Now, we got this world international monetary crisis. Hell, that's the natural results of unjust weights and balances and usury and debt. It's been going on for thousands of years. No big deal there. But now, there was a time in America when we didn't practice these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Instead of practicing banking, we had gold and silver coin issued by our treasury. It was called the Coinage Act of 1792. And instead of Social Security, we practiced individual responsibility. You have to take care of yourself when you get to be old and pull a beard. And we educated our children at home. You know, none of our founding fathers, those 57 signers or 56 signers to the Declaration of Independence, you know, none of those guys went to PS 235. They didn't have public school. They were homeschooled. They were educated privately. Now, today, we're very used to this concept of having a public school. I was educated in public school. Hell, I'm one of those. I'm not denying it at all. And it wasn't the best education in the world, even when I went to school, but it was an education. Now, in looking at where we stand today in relationship to the Scripture, in relationship to the Creator of the universe, there are 133 laws in the Bible, 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments that are all organized into 133 statutes, judgments, and commandments, or laws, or subject matters of law, just like we have in our U.S. Code, which has 50 titles to it, 50 subject matters, which are made up of literally thousands of statutes. You know, if you take a look at Title 26, our income tax code, it's made up of hundreds of laws, individual statutes, do's and don'ts. If you take a look at your traffic code in your state, you have more than 2,000 traffic statutes in your state. Now, I can't speak for you people in Australia and Canada. I don't know how many you got, but hell, if you're like we Americans over here, you've got thousands just like we do. 2,000 last time I took a look. Every state in the Union, I mean, we got 50 states here in the Union. Every one of them has 2,000 or more. Now, you go down and get a driver's license, and you sign an application, and you promise to obey and practice all of those traffic statutes, all 2,000 of them. Hell, you people don't even know what they are. Hell, the police don't even know what they are. When the cop is giving you a ticket, you ever had this cop, he stops you, says, come on back here to the car, and you get in the car with him, and he's sitting there writing up a ticket. He has to look it up. He don't know. There's so damn many laws out there, he can't even keep track of them, and he's the paid professional. Now, the church people, you know, church lady and church man, they come to you and they say, well, you can't practice all of the law of God. 759 statutes organized into 133 subject matters. You can't do that. You cannot practice the Ten Commandments. That's what you're told. Mark Twain had a word for that. He said there are liars and there are damn liars. And I think it's a damn lie. Let me ask you this. If you can practice 2,000 traffic statutes, how come you can't practice 759 of God's statutes? Now, I know that you all practice 759 traffic statutes at least. I mean, if you didn't practice at least 759 of them, you'd be in jail for the rest of your life. For crying out loud, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. The idea that you can't practice 759 traffic statutes, but you can practice 759 statutes of the law of God, but you can practice 2,000 traffic statutes and thousands of income tax statutes. And here in America, you know how many laws we got here in this country at every level, you know, from the city council, city ordinances, we call them here in this country, on up to the federal law. You know how many laws there are out there in the country? 50 states, 3,500 counties. God knows how many city ordinances in our federal government. Well, at last count, there was 2.5 million laws. 2.5 million laws. And the federal government, just Washington, D.C., is adding to that at the rate of 47 pages a day. Not 47 laws a day. 47 pages of law a day is being enacted by Congress or by the regulatory agencies, of which God only knows how many there are. 37 last time I took a look at it. 37 regulatory agencies, you know, like the Department of Agriculture passing out laws for you farmers and the Internal Revenue Service passing out laws for all you taxpayers. And I mean, you know, you got all these agencies of government, and they're passing rules and regulations, and building departments are doing that, you know, in your city, and your county commissioners are doing that at the county level, and then they got the state legislatures out there. I mean, you know, you talk about law now. My God, it's just law, law, law. There's so damn many laws out there that you people are all criminals. There's no way in hell. You don't even know these 2.5 million laws. You can sit there and say, well, the law of Pennsylvania doesn't apply to me because I'm from California. Well, that's true. I don't deny that, but you know, just take a trip to Pennsylvania, and then all of a sudden, when you cross the border into Pennsylvania, all the laws of Pennsylvania now apply to you. You know, save for a couple of legal exceptions, but hell, you don't know what the legal exceptions are anyway, so they just burn it. So the concept, then, that the preacher tells you is that, well, the law of God is so complex. I mean, it is so complex, and it's so unfair, and unrealistic, and anachronic, and it's, you know, out of date, and you just can't, you just forget the Ten Commandments now, you just can't handle that. But let's concentrate on the traffic code in Romans 13, 1 through 6, and let's make sure that we obey all the laws of the state. Well, listen, the state promotes crime by government, and it's aided and abetted by the church. Let me give you a couple, three examples here. For instance, they're not limited to, when we take a look at a subject matter like usury, let's pick out one here. Here's usury. Did you know that usury is a crime that it violates the law of God? That when you go down to the bank and borrow money to buy your house, that you're committing a capital felony. Did you know that? Now, you go to church, and I'll bet you if you're like me when I went to church, I went twice. And I can remember, you know, the Lutheran church, I went twice. I've been to church a time or two after that, but I wanted to point out that we had a building fund when I was a kid in the Lutheran church. And in this building fund, they had you sign this little card, and you pledged $1.50 a week. I was a paper boy, and I pledged $1.50 a week and $6 a month. Hell, that was $75 a year, you know, for a kid 12 years old. And I signed this card, and I pledged that amount of money to pay off the church building fund. Now, in order to build the church, they went out and they borrowed $30,000, which, you know, 1950 was a god-awful lot of money, $30,000. And 6 years before that, my granny bought a big old Victorian house on 8th Street in Eureka, California for $4,400. I mean, hell, you could buy a big old house for $5,000. So $30,000 to build a church. And so they went out and built a church. They borrowed the money from the bank, and they paid usury on it. Now, you'd think if any institution in the country would be alerted to usury being a crime, it would be the church, no, wouldn't you? And I could understand your business or mom and dad or Aunt Bessie borrowing money from the bank because they were ignorant and didn't know, but how the hell does the church do that? Now, let me show you why it's a crime, why it's against the law to do that. There are 23 places in the Bible where the word usury appears. So if you were to look it up in a concordance, usury. In Exodus 22, verses 25 through 27, get your pen out there and sharpen it on both ends of your pencil, and write that down. Exodus 22, verses 25 through 27. And there's one statute out of 23 that tells you don't do that. And furthermore, it's a capital felony. Now, how do I know it's a capital felony? Well, it's over here in Ezekiel chapter 18. So we flip over here to Ezekiel 18, and then I'll just point this out to you. In Ezekiel 18, see, I'm going to find usury in here. It says, starting in verse 14, now, lo, if he begets a son that sees all of his father's sin, which he has done, and considers and does not such like, that hath not eaten upon the mountains, neither hath lifted up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, has not defiled his neighbor's wife, neither has oppressed any, has not withholden the pledge, neither has spoiled by violence, but hath given his bread to the hungry, and has covered the naked with a garment, that has taken off his hand from the poor, that has not received usury nor increase, and underline that's verse 17, has not received usury nor increase, has executed my judgments, has walked in my statutes, he shall not die for the iniquity of his father, he shall surely live. Okay? So if you don't practice usury and interest, you will surely live. Isn't that just special? Now listen to this. On the other hand, in verse 10, we'll just go a little earlier here. This is Ezekiel chapter 18, now talking about usury, capital felony. If he begets a son that is a robber, a shedder of blood, and that doeth the like to any one of these things, and that does not any of those duties, but even has eaten upon the mountains, defiled his neighbor's wife, has oppressed the poor and the needy, has spoiled by violence, has not restored the pledge, and has lifted up his eyes to the idols, has committed abomination, has given forth upon usury, and has taken increase. Okay? Shall he then live? He shall not live. He has done all these abominations, and he shall surely die, and his blood shall be upon him. Now, you know, you go out today, and you buy a big screen TV, you know, from Best Buy, and you finance it through the associates or beneficial finance, and you pay 30 or 35% interest, and you put it on your credit card, for crying out loud. You pay your bank 25, 30% interest on your credit card. You people don't sit there and say, oh my God, this is a capital felony punishable by death, now, do you? Well, where in the hell was your preacher? Let me just ask you that. Where in the hell has your preacher been? Isn't he the guy, the sky pilot, the Holy Joe, that's supposed to tell you this? And so I want to give you the scripture. Go look it up for yourself, as I say, down at the card room, you know, read them and weep. This isn't true because I'm telling you this. If I had never been born, and if George Gordon never existed, the world would be here just exactly the way it is today. And you'd be here in the world just exactly the way it is here today, doing exactly what you've been doing or going to continue to do. Now, I'm just a crummy reporter, so my job is just to give you the information. I'm not here trying to get you to give your heart to Jesus or trying to get you to quit practicing usury interest. I don't care what you do. But as a reporter, I'd be remiss if I didn't give you all the facts. And you're not getting all the facts from your government. So I pointed out to you last week, you people need a plan here. The government's eating your lunch. They're leading you down the primrose path, and they're aided and abetted by the business magnates, the bankers, the insurance executives, and the doctors and dentists. And then the number one aiders and abettors here are the church leaders, these 330,000 sky pilots and holy joes called Christian preachers out here that are remiss in failing to inform you that you're in violation of some pretty serious laws here. That's why you have an economic crisis. The reason that your house is going into foreclosure, the reason that the economy is going into meltdown is because of the violation of some 15 economic laws, of which usury is one of those economic laws. And your preacher, who should be telling you don't do this, probably has a mortgage on the church that he's servicing by getting you to sign a pledge that you'll pledge so much money to pay the bank and the bankers with their usury and interest. They have made you a co-conspirator. In law, we call this an accessory before the fact. Before you went out and bought this new church or bought all this new stuff over here, you signed this pledge to pay this mortgage off at the bank, to pay this usury and interest. And then after the fact, you physically sent in your check. That's a crime. That's a capital felony. Aided and abetted by the church, promoted by your government, and profited by your banker. And then you sit here and you say, I just can't understand why they're foreclosing on my house and why I lost my job and why the economy's turning upside down. I'm going to vote the Democratic ticket. I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. Well, okay, but the Republicans didn't invent usury and interest, you know. And you can blame it on the Republicans or conservatives or whoever, whatever political party you're opposed to, you know, whatever country you live in, but they didn't invent that. They go along with it, and they ate it, and they abet it. They're all part and parcel with it, the Republicans and Democrats. I except for Ron Paul and a few of these iconoclastic-type politicians that come along and say, wait a minute, this is going to lead us to grief. We need to abolish the Federal Reserve. We need to abolish this fiat paper currency and go back to gold and silver. There's a couple of screw-loose guys that are around out here in the political conventions, but, you know, they don't get anywhere. They're not going anywhere in politics, for crying out loud. We all know that, don't we? So when I say we need a plan, I'm not going to reform the government. For crying out loud, the Federal Reserve is bigger than George Gordon, and the IRS is bigger than George Gordon, and the U.S. government is bigger than George Gordon. You know, I'm not space case out here, but I got to have a plan. What in the hell am I going to do? These guys are all practicing usury and interest. They've now run the economy into the ground. They're now printing money, and they're going to run us into hyperinflation. This hyperinflation, I love this guy, Barack Obama. He's for the poor. All you poor people out there, you know, this Barack Obama is for the poor. This is the worst thing that could happen to the poor. The rich people, you know, the merchants of the world, they're not going to suffer under the Barack Obama administration, but you poor people over there, you guys are going to pay the inflation tax. We call it the stealth tax. They're going to give you all these benefits, and then when prices go up, that's where you pay your tax. And so the Social Security recipients, God, I love this one. In this country, we got Social Security. In your country, you probably call it by some other name, but here in the States, we have this thing called Social Security. It's called the third rail of politics. God, people just love it. Came in with Roosevelt back in the 30s. And so every year they give what we call a COLA, C-O-L-A, a cost of living adjustment. And they give the old people 3.5% more money every year, while inflation rages at 9, 10, 12, 14%. Now it's running 19%. Are you going to get a 19% COLA adjustment this year? No, you're going to get 3 or 4%, which means that you're paying the difference as the stealth tax. And you think that this guy's doing you some favor? Hell, this is on the backs of the poor. The poor are the people that suffer the most. If you want to know who should not be paying usury and interest, it's the poor. But you people all go to church, you know, so you can praise Jesus. Jesus never told you people to practice usury and interest. He told you not to. And then it's your preacher over here that's telling you to practice usury and interest. Now somebody's going to write me a letter and say, you know, Gordon, you're preaching another Jesus. By God, you're right. I am. Hell, I don't deny it. I'll step right up there to the plate and tell you, yep, there's a different Jesus out here than the one you've been hearing about in church. There's the Jesus of the Scripture. Let me give you another illustration here. Now, all you Christians out there know that the Ten Commandments have been abolished and done away with and nailed to the cross. Now, you heard that when you went to Sunday school. And your preacher told you can't possibly obey all of the commandments of God. They're just absolutely impossible. So you can forget that. And Jesus loves you, and so you just got to do the best you can and just show a lot of love, whatever the hell this love thing is, which I think I can show you here in a minute. Now, over here in Matthew 4, verse 4, Jesus made an observation one day. He was out here talking. And so here's what he said, and you can get this right out. You know, if you got a red letter Bible, you can read it right out of his mouth. It's just, watch my lips. I don't happen to have one of those red letter Bibles, but I got one here. And it says, but he answered and he said, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Now, you Christians can listen to that. See, that's from the New Testament. That's Jesus. I don't know if your preacher ever told you about that. If you're an average Joe Sixpack, you've never read the Bible. The average guy, when I bring him into class here, I start off by saying, have any of you people ever read the Bible? Everybody raises their hand. Yes, I have read the Bible. Then I ask question number two. Have you ever read 1 Hezekiah 14:4? And everybody looks at me and they blank stare. Sometimes people actually raise their hands. Well, there is no 1 Hezekiah 14:4. Then I ask question number three. I say, now, have you ever read the book of Genesis? And everybody raises their hand. I ask them, how many chapters are in the book of Genesis? Everybody looks at me with a blank stare. Have you ever read Genesis 47 and compared that with Franklin D. Roosevelt's New Deal in 1933? Everybody looks at me with a blank stare. Are you people fully familiar now with Noah's flood and the Genesis flood? Have you ever looked at the science behind Noah's flood? Blank stare. Then I ask, have you ever read all 39 books of the Old Testament and all 26 in the New? Have you read all 66 books of the Scripture, Genesis to Revelation? Read it all, every word. Once in a while, some guy can raise his hand and say, yeah, I've read the entire Bible. But as a general rule, and I can say about 99% of you out there never read the Bible, Genesis to Revelation. Never read it. But you people all say, I've read the Bible. See, yeah, it's like opening up the newspaper. Have you read the paper today? Yeah, I read the paper. Did you see in the paper thus and such? No, I didn't see that. Well, then you didn't read the paper today. You read some of the paper today. You read the headlines. Maybe you read five stories in the paper, but you didn't read the paper. Did you see the classified ads? Did you see the help wanted ads? Did you read them all? And that's the way people are with the scripture. They don't read the scripture. They read little sections out of this and that and another thing over here, but they don't know they're ass from a hot rock when it gets right down to the bottom line. And that's why I bring this to your attention here. Jesus said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Now, the day he made that statement, not one word of the New Testament had been written yet. He's still alive. Not a word of the New Testament was written until after he died. So here he is running around mouthing off, you know, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Hell, the only words that had proceeded out of the mouth of God to that moment in time was the 39 books of the Old Testament. And your preacher says, well, you can forget the Old Testament. That's old and done away with, and it's archaic, and we don't have to do that no more. Now, a fellow came up to Jesus one day, and he was a lawyer, as it turns out here. It's in Matthew chapter 19. Let me read you another little story here. Matthew 19. And listen to this. This guy comes up to him. Behold, one came unto him and said, good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? Hey, that's about as straightforward as you can get, kids. This guy walks up to Jesus and says, hey, what do I have to do to go to heaven? What do I have to do to get saved? Sometimes people knock on my door and they say, are you saved, brother? I want to know if I've been saved. I tell them, no, I haven't. I didn't know I was in danger. You know, they're religious people. Hell, they mean well. I don't deny that. But, you know, these people, they don't read the scripture. They go to church and they get indoctrinated. And the preacher tells them what it is they believe and how they believe it and why. And this is what our denomination teaches. And that's what they believe in. That's what they go out and knock on your door and sell. If you want to know what does the average proselytizer know, he doesn't know his ass from a hot rock. That's the bottom line. But he's out here trying to sell it to you. Now listen, here's a guy comes up to the boss himself and says, what do I need to do to get saved, go to heaven, or get whatever it is that you're going to get, you know, when you get whatever it is that you're looking for? Verse 17, he said, well, why do you call me good? There is none good but one, and that is God. But if you will enter into life, keep the commandments. Have you ever heard a preacher say that? If you want to be saved, you keep the commandments. And this guy says, which? Which commandments? And so Jesus tells him. It's right here. Verse 18. He said to him, which? And Jesus said, you shall do no murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. Honor your father and mother. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. He cited five of the Ten Commandments, or six. Five or six of the Ten Commandments. Right there. Now, where do we find the Ten Commandments? They're in Exodus chapter 20. Write that down. Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. That's where you find the Ten Commandments. What did Jesus say that you needed to do if you want to be saved, if you want to enter into life, if you want to go to heaven and be with Jesus? He said, keep the commandments. That's another Jesus. You never heard this guy before. Now, your problem with this other Jesus that Paul mentioned here, he says, if any comes to you and preaches another Jesus, don't listen to him. Hell, you've already listened to the other Jesus. You ain't listened to the real one yet. You ain't heard about this guy. This guy's got a different agenda. This guy's got a different program. The Jesus you've been following has been selling you the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Go on out here and borrow money and sign a pledge here at the church to pay the money back. I did that when I was a kid. I thought, hell, that preacher must know what he's talking about. He must be okay. I mean, the preacher's over here telling me how to get saved, how I can go to heaven and be with Jesus. So obviously, this church building fund must be an all right deal. It was years later I found out, well, what was this Pastor Kohler thinking about over here, having all of us guys out here in the church sign up here to pay a loan at the bank and pay interest and usury, and with unjust weights and balances on top of it? Fiat currency. Huh? What the hell was that preacher thinking about? Well, sure as hell wasn't thinking about this Jesus, I'll tell you. All right, now meanwhile, back on the farm here, kids, I got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. You should keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and the Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now last week we were talking about a plan for the future. I mean, you've got to have some kind of a deal over here. Let's figure out a plan. If you're in debt, like most Americans are, and you've got all these credit card debts, and you don't know if you're going to be keeping your job very much longer, and you got this house over here with a big mortgage on it, and you got a car, and that car you're making payments on, can you start to see how tenuous your existence is? You know, if you lose your job, you can't pay your credit cards. You could end up being homeless. I see there's more and more homeless people out there. All right, now, if you're a young person and you're going to college and you've been encouraged now to get a college education, get a degree so that you can get out here and make big bucks, and you need a student loan and you need to pay interest and usury, do you know that you're going to put yourself in debt for about 30 years to the banksters, and that the money that you're going to buy, you know, with your education here, you're going to buy and borrow this money. Do you know what that's going to cost you? I mean, you people go to college, you get degrees after your name and you can't count. You know, you people can't count. You can't do simple arithmetic, like figure out, well, how much money am I borrowing and how much money am I going to be paying back? Did you understand that the people that are lending you this money are not your friends? That they're really not concerned about you. They're concerned about how much money they're going to make. And they're making this loan to you because they're going to make something and get something for it. And that they're thinking about themselves, and that they know that there's a certain number of you college kids out there that aren't going to pay your loans back, but they know there's a certain number that are going to pay their loans back. And so they program that in. They got a profit margin in there. Do you know that? All right. All right, now, your creator now told you don't do that. Your creator, the God of creation, this Jesus that I'm telling you about here in the Bible, he told you not to sign up for the church building fund. Don't buy that car on credit. Don't sign that mortgage on that house. Don't sign that student loan over there. Don't do any of that. Did you know he told you don't do that? Now, you want to go to college, and it costs money. And so the option is, well, if I want to go to college, I've got to borrow the money. I've got to get a student loan so Jesus can go suck on a raw egg, and I'm going to go borrow the money. Gee, I want that house. I want that car. And so you're going to go do it anyway. Now, there's going to be a penalty that comes from that. And that's just the way life is. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. Now, when you get a belly full of this crap, and you've suffered enough, and you find out that you're out on the streets, and you're flat ass broken, and you've got no money, and you've lost your house and your car, and so on, any time that you get ready, you know, you can make a change. I would suggest that you think about making the change before you lose your house and find yourself out on the streets without a car and without a job, that you think ahead and say, gee, maybe I ought to reform myself before all of these disasters come upon me. Well, it's a wild new idea, looking ahead and thinking, you know, for yourself. But instead of following the preacher and the politician and the scientist and all the rest of these paid gurus over here, these economists, I was watching the news hour the other night, Paul Tsongas, you know, he's in San Francisco, they're having a big get-together, and he's asking all these economists out there, how come you didn't warn us? And they're all laughing. Well, we didn't know. Well, we guess we made a mistake. I think old Harry Truman hit the nail on the head talking about economists. You know, he said, if you took all the economists in the world and locked them up in the room, they couldn't find their way out. The economists don't know. And that's what the bottom line is. And so these economists over here that led you down the primrose path and couldn't tell you that the economy was going to collapse, those are the very same people that you're giving $700 billion to dole out to the same fools that put you in this mess to start with. And you people have degrees after your name and say, this is intelligent? Huh? I mean, come on, give me a break here, would you? I mean, I know I'm locked up in an insane asylum called the United States of America. You Australians down there, come on, surely, there's got to be somebody in the world that's got his head screwed on halfway straight here, and I can see that this is insane. Now our president says he's going to spend another $700 billion. My God, what caused this economic crisis? Bad loans and debt. Bad loans and debt. Usury and interest caused all this mess. And so what are we going to do? We need to make more bad loans and take on more debt. Here was a good one. I just saw this the other day. It's a real neat one. Remember GMAC? Well, it's called the General Motors Acceptance Corporation. Well, they're bankrupt. So they went to the federal government and they said, well, look, we're bankrupt and we're part of General Motors and we need to be bailed out. And it would be a real good idea if out of that $700 billion you were to give us $6 billion. So the Fed's dead. They gave them $6 billion. Now, why is General Motors Acceptance Corporation bankrupt? Because they made a lot of bad loans to a lot of people that couldn't pay the money back. That's simple enough. Okay. So they got the $6 billion. And so now, here's what they did. They lowered the credit score. I think the credit score was 720. They lowered it down to about 650 so that they could make more loans so that they could sell more cars. Excuse me. But when the credit score was 720, they made a lot of bad loans, which is why they went bankrupt. You mean to tell me that if you lend more money to more people with a lower credit score, that they're going to pay back more of those loans? You see why I keep telling you, we have to be locked up in an insane asylum. And for us to believe this kind of crap that comes out of Washington, comes out of these lunatics over here, makes us insane to buy into that kind of nonsense, doesn't it? I mean, if you're lending money to people with a credit score of 720 and they're defaulting on their loans, and then somebody gives you $5-6 billion, and then you lower the credit scores to 650, doesn't that tell you you're going to have more defaults, not less? Would seem like to me that if I got $6 billion, so Jesus, I was lending money with credit scores to people with 720 credit scores, and they weren't paying me back, that's why I went broke. Maybe I need to raise the credit score to 820 and get more people to pay me back. I'll make fewer sales, but I'll get more of my money back. I don't know. I guess I'm just not a good businessman. Jesus told you not to do this. And there's a law involved here, and we did it, and now we got a collapsed economy. Can you boys and girls start connecting these dots? You know, when you come to school here, the first thing I tell you in business school, I say, first thing we got to do is get you people to zero COD. We got to get you people out of debt. We got to get you off the credit cards and usury and interest. You can't make money. You can't be a success in life economically if you are the borrower who is servant to the lender. I mean, if you want to be the master, you got to be something different than the servant. And it's the master that lends. It's the servant that borrows. Can you get that? Okay. Now, if you want to be the servant, you're on the right track. Keep borrowing. If you want to be the master, then you got to do something different. You got to stop borrowing. You got to stop paying interest and usury. And there's a few other economic laws that you need. Now, I'm one of the few guys around here. I'm not complaining about the economy collapsing. I'm not losing my job. Hell, I'm positioning myself to make profit off of all you poor saps that are losing your houses and cars and the rest of them. Hey, I think that inflation, this hyperinflation that's coming down the pike, I think that's bad for most of you people out there, but I plan to make a lot of profit off of it, just like the banks and government, everybody else. Hey, listen, it's bad, and we ought not to do it, and God told us don't use unjust weights and balances, but, you know, you people are smarter than God. Last thing we need is more fiat paper money, but that's what our president tells us he's going to give us, more fiat paper money. Okay. Well, you just go ahead and wallow in that fiat paper money. I'm going to wallow in more gold and silver. How do you like that? And I would suggest that you do the same thing, because that's what God teaches us in the scripture here about just weights and balances. Yeah, practice just weights and balances. You'll find that in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36, and Deuteronomy 25, verse 13 through 16. You write that down? No, Leviticus 19, 35 and 36. Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. I just want to pass that on. I know, it runs counter to conventional wisdom. It runs exact opposite from what your president and all your bankers are telling you and all of the economists. But, for what it's worth, Jesus here says that you ought to live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, and I think that's good advice. So I just thought I'd pass that on to you. You're all adults. You can do whatever the hell you want, but, you know, take a word to the wise. Now, you've been told. Now, if you can't listen, well, then you got to repeat it. You mean you got to reinvent the wheel. If you need to reinvent the wheel, we went through this in 1783 to 1787 when the continental currency collapsed and we went into hyperinflation. And then our founding fathers repented in sackcloth and ashes, and they gave us the Coinage Act of 1792 and Article 1, Section 10 in our Constitution that gave us gold and silver coin. We became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world in 113 years. Now, that's what happened with gold and silver. So we've been through these economic collapses before. It happened more than once. Now, the solution to this is to throw out the Federal Reserve, stop the banks and banking, shut down the credit cards, go back to gold and silver, and do what we did before, which was successful, and avoid all this pump priming and Keynesian Keynes crap and go back to what worked. Now, we're not going to do that. So I'm not deaf, dumb, and blind here, kids. We're not going to do that. So for our plan for the future, let's concentrate on just you and me, Don. That's just you and me. The other 300 million Americans out there can go to hell in the handbasket, just me and you, partner. And then if we follow this, God says, hey, this is going to make you a lot of money, and you're going to be healthy, wealthy, and wise, and happy as a clam at high tide. All right, so now let's give it a test and see if that's true. Now, I'm going to give you another law here. There's 82 of these laws here that we're in violation of. And as we violate these 82 laws, out of 133 laws, we Americans are in violation of 82. We still practice 51. Now, that's surprising. We Americans actually practice 51 laws of God here in the United States of America. For instance, I'll give you an illustration. There's a statute here in Leviticus 7, verses 26 and 27, that says, you shall eat no manner of blood. And you know that our government and our slaughterhouses to this day bleed our animals when they kill them. They kill the animal, they cut his throat, and they bleed the blood on the ground. Okay, so there's an example of a law that we actually follow in this country. You shall do no murder. We actually follow that law. The police are death on people that run around killing people. And if they can catch you, they will. And if they can prosecute you and put you in prison, they'll do that. In some cases, they'll even kill you, put you to death, capital punishment. So there are some laws here that we still practice. I'm not denying that. My point is that there's 82 laws here that we're in violation of. See, we're in violation of more laws than we actually practice. And what's happened to us here in America is because we are violating so many of these laws, we're getting so many penalties. And the penalties are now getting to be greater than the benefits or the blessings. And so now we're starting to pay the piper. We've been paying the piper here for a long time, but it's getting worse and worse. Take another one over here called sodomy. Sodomy. Now, this is a fun thing, sodomy. Everybody likes it. Nobody's opposed to it. Well, there's three or four of you lunatic fringers out there opposed to sodomy. But in Leviticus 20, verse 13, this is Jesus. Now, remember, this is the same Jesus that said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. So here's some words that proceed out of the mouth of God. This is politically incorrect. Politically incorrect. Leviticus 20, verse 13. Now, for you sodomites out there, I'm not here to reform you guys. I don't care what you do. The average sodomite lives to be 45 years old. And the average American lives to be 75 and a half years old. I mean, that ought to answer your question right there. Is sodomy good? And, of course, if you die from AIDS, the average is 39 years. And so, if you think AIDS has been conquered now with HIV drugs, that's false. It hasn't. You're still going to die from AIDS, but it's going to take you longer and cost you more. It's about $100,000 now to die from AIDS. Now, you could quit sodomy anytime you want to. I mean, you could just quit cold turkey like I quit cigarettes, you know. It's a wild new idea, but just thought I'd throw that one out to you. Now, there's an example in the Bible called Sodom and Gomorrah. I think it's out around Genesis chapter 18. Let me see if that story is still in the Bible. Genesis chapter 18. Am I right? Is that just off the top of my head? Let's see if I can find Sodom and Gomorrah here. Yeah. Hey, tell me I ain't a prophet in my own time. Here it is, right here. Now, this Jesus Christ, you know, of the New Testament, he was alive and well clear back in the Old Testament. He had a name called Melchizedek. Anyway, he used to live in a place called Jerusalem. One day he was with a couple of his buddies, Michael the Archangel and Gabriel. Two of the archangels, he was on his way over to Sodom and Gomorrah. He's just walking over one day. And on his way, between Jerusalem and Sodom and Gomorrah, which is over on the southern end of the Black Sea, or the Dead Sea, rather, he was on his way, it's 65 miles, about halfway, he ran into his old buddy Abraham. And so Abraham said, hey, come on over here and sit down, we'll kill a fatted calf and we'll chew the rag for a while. And so Jesus and Michael and Gabriel, they're sitting under a tree and chewing the rag and talking politics, I guess. So Abraham asked him, he said, hey, where are you going? He said, I'm on my way to Sodom and Gomorrah. He said, what are we going to do over in Sodom? And Jesus said, well, I'm on my way over there to see if it's true what I've been hearing. I've heard some pretty bad reports about Sodom and Gomorrah and a few other towns around there. And so Abraham said, well, what is it you've heard? He said, I heard there's a bunch of perverts over there, and I'm going over to kill them. And Abraham, he got real excited. And Abraham said, what? You're going over to Sodom, and what are you going to do? So I'm going to nuke them both. This is sweet Jesus, you know, way in a manger. The guy, you know, that you celebrate his birthday here the other day. Yeah. Sweet Jesus, way in a manger. He's on his way to Sodom and Gomorrah, so I'm going to nuke him. Now, Abraham got excited about that, and he said, well, wait a minute, boss, what if there's 50 righteous over there? So Jesus thought about it for a minute. It's Melchizedek. You know, in those days, he called himself Melchizedek. He said, well, you know, you got a good point there. I'll tell you what, if there's 50 righteous over there, he says, I won't kill him. So Abraham said, well, what if you're 5 short? 45? He said, okay, if there's 45, I won't kill him. 40? If there's 40, I won't kill him. 35? 30? 25? 20? 15, 10. Abraham jewed him down to 10. He said, if there's 10 righteous over there. Jesus said, if there's 10 righteous in Sodom and Gomorrah, I won't destroy the place for the sake of those 10. So the two angels went over there. They're looking for 10, and they could find 4. And one of them turned back. They ended up with 3. They couldn't find 5. But here's the good news. Whenever there's a disaster like Sodom and Gomorrah, there's a punishment, there's a judgment like Sodom and Gomorrah, the 3 righteous guys in the city have to be saved alive. God does not kill the righteous with the unrighteous. That's good news. If you're living in New Orleans, San Francisco, or Chicago, and you think that you're one of those 3 righteous, okay, it's time to leave town. It's time to get out of Dodge. I told you that. Remember this guy wrote me a letter last week? I read you the letter to the guy from New York. I said, if there's any way, partner, that you can get the hell out of New York City, you do it. Now, the reality of it is that for most of you people, you're locked up there and you ain't leaving. You can't get out. Now, when Lot, his wife and two daughters, left town, they didn't leave in a U-Haul truck. They just left with what their shirts on their backs. They just got out of their houses and walked out of town. And while they were walking out of town, the fire and brimstone fell. Now, for you sodomites out there, you're sitting there saying, oh, chewing your, you know, just chomping at the bit here, you know, just grinding your teeth. Hey, don't get mad at me. I got a guy telling me, what are you, some kind of homophobic? Yeah, that's right. I'm a homophobic. I'm absolutely terrified of sodomites. I stay as far away from you guys as I can get. You know, nothing personal. But, you know, there's a day of reckoning coming, and I just wanted to point this out, that this guy, this God here, this Jesus, this guy over here, he's a different breed of cat than you're used to. This ain't the sweet Jesus, you know, that you're supposed to give your heart to. This is the guy that killed the whole Egyptian army in 20 minutes in the Red Sea, killed everybody on planet Earth in Noah's flood, and destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. We're talking about a different guy here. That's my point. That's why I said last week, I said, you know, we need a plan here. So if you're in San Francisco and you think that you might be one of those three righteous guys, it's time for you to get the hell out of Dodge. And if you ain't getting out of there, well, okay, hunker down, get ready. Because when this thing turns turtle, it's going to get bad. In fact, Jesus told you, I told you this last week, Jesus told you in Matthew 24, verse 22, he said, it's going to get so bad that if I don't come back here and stop this crazy nonsense, there isn't going to be any flesh saved alive on planet Earth. Monsanto and their GMOs are going to get you. So I pointed out to you, so this GMO thing over here violates Leviticus 19:19. I don't think your preacher was on top of it. I don't think your preacher has been explaining to you this GMO thing and this hybridization of plants, which you were told not to do. It's going to kill you. I mean, you got that straight from the horse's mouth. You don't believe me because I'm telling you, because I'm a pathological liar. And I never denied it. But, you know, you can believe this guy because he says, I'm the God that cannot lie. This is the guy that gave you the straight skinny. He said, hey, listen, pay attention to me now. Listen up. All right, now if you can do that, maybe you can do something to make a meaningful change or a meaningful plan for the future. If you can't, well, you know, then bend over, put your head between your knees, and kiss her goodbye. Hey, I got to give you a final reminder here. We're out of time, so I've got to tell you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I'll leave it right there. See you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.